Welcome aboard to the Mary Griffith Show, airing each and every weekday morning, 9:15 to 10, right here on WTAD, powered every weekday morning by Harvest Ridge Coffee from Refreshment Services Pepsi. Well, we have a familiar name in firefighting sitting in the studio with me today as we talk with Quincy firefighters about their profession. Zach Valcamp is here, definitely not the oldest member of the Valcamp crew. I know you probably get tired of talking about it, but I'm old line Quincy, so you come from a long line of firefighters, but you still had to pass the test.
Yes, I did.
You didn't just get in like in the old days in New York. He's my son. He's on the fourth. Tell us a little bit about who your what family, because your grandfather. You're great. Well, tell us. I'll get it confused. You tell me all the Valcamps that have served.
Yep, my great grandpa. He was a member of the Quincy Fire Department way back in the day during the 60s. And then my father, who just recently retired, he was also a member of the Quincy Fire Department. So I'm just happy to be here and carry on the tradition, and I'm loving it so far.
And Bernie was the chief.
Yep, yes,
yeah.
He was.
Was it weird? Because there for a small period of time, you were actually serving under your father, although you're not, you know, he was the chief and you were lowly.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, so it wasn't like he was interacting with you on a day-to-day basis, but that's kind of an intriguing aspect because you kind of know how the sausage is made, don't you?
Yeah. So it was a lot of fun. See my dad at work every now and then, obviously, with him being the chief, we didn't really correspond too much.
Yeah, he had the cushy hours, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because I'm sure growing up, you heard, did you know your great-grandfather? Were you ever able to meet him?
When I was really young is when he passed away. So I remember meeting him, remember talking to him, but not really in-depth conversations, especially about the fire department. But he was a great guy.
But Skip Valcamp, your grandfather, was a city councilman for many years. And so I guess because you have this unique perspective, I just want to ask you these questions. Hold on a minute, I'm going to sneeze. Or not. I apologize.
Oh, no worries.
This is the terrible thing about having a little spring cold when you're a radio announcer. You probably heard, you know, obviously the great things, and they obviously encouraged you, I'm sure, in many respects. But they may have discouraged you in many respects, too, because I followed my father into the footsteps, and he said, whatever you do, don't become a radio broadcaster.
Yeah.
Become a lawyer. So I guess what I'm saying is, from your unique perspective, what were some of the great things that really made you want to be a firefighter? And what were the things that made you think, well, I want to be a firefighter, but I know there's a downside to it? Because there's a downside to every job.
Yeah. So some of the things I really liked about it is, obviously, growing up, watching my dad, he was a firefighter. So it was, I wanted to kind of carry on the tradition a little bit, too. And I always looked up to him growing up. So a bit, when I graduated college, actually, my plan was not to be a firefighter, but then I worked a couple of years somewhere else and then just kind of always had that feeling in the back of my mind, and I had tested just in case. So when it finally the time came around, I ended up taking the job and don't regret it at all. Only the thing that I was worried about taking it was obviously you miss some holidays, you're there overnights, but that just comes with the job and it hasn't bothered me at all. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, that is the thing. I mean, obviously, well, you forgot the most important thing. You could die at any moment. You know, I guess you can't think about that all the time. But the truth of the matter is, my dad used to say, because he, you know, in this profession, we don't get holidays off either.
Yeah.
He'd say Thanksgiving is just a Thursday.
Yep, exactly.
You know? And so you do have to give up a lot of time with your family. You have to be called out in the middle of the night. You know, Christmas, still, somebody has to work at the fire station. And it's always the guys like Zach Valcamp that get stuck with the bad shift. So, you know, but I'm glad you've chosen this as a profession. Now, not everybody's cut out to be a firefighter, but I think it would help a lot of people if we understood more about your job.
Mm-hmm.
And so that leads us right into the topic you came prepared to talk about today.
Yep.
You'll get so much rizzing back at the house because I talk so much about you. But the Citizens Firefighting Academy. Tell us all about that, please.
Yep. So we offer this just to kind of let anybody can join. It's just for people to kind of figure out what we do, understand kind of the job that we do. So it's a fun time. We obviously get to do the fun stuff like flow some water and you get to connect to hydrants and different things like that and just kind of learn about the job and the different things that we offer for the community. It runs from May 6th through June 3rd, and it's every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. So if you're interested in that, we have flyers, or you can call down to Central Fire Station and kind of get some more information about how to sign up from there. But I highly recommend it. It's always a fun time, and I get to enjoy knowing everybody and meeting everybody through it.
So it starts May 6th and it goes through mm-hmm. June 3rd. What night of the week does that meet?
Tuesdays.
Tuesday nights. And what yep. are the times again?
6 p.m. to 9 p.m.
Okay, so it's a commitment, but yep. the great thing about it is you get to nobody understands how high pressure that hose is.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
you'll actually get to hold on to the hose. And, yep. yeah. Or the hose will hold on to you.
Yep. And we'll be there to help you.
Oh, yeah.
We won't let you fly away or anything.
You might get to go up in the aerial lift and see what
yeah.
it's like up high.
Yep.
Of course, you'll learn how after it's all over, you got to roll up all that hose. You got to put all that stuff away. And the dangers that are inherent. You'll also learn mm-hmm. about the specialized equipment.
Yep, definitely.
Which is exceptionally heavy, yeah. but needs to be protective. So all the things that we see a red truck go racing by us with the lights and sirens on, we don't think about.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to be trained to be a firefighter by any stretch after this, but you're going to have more understanding of what they do.
Yep. It just kind of gives you an insight to all the different things that we can do and what emergency services we offer and even non-emergency, what we do with the training and different aspects of the job like that.
Very important. So this is Tuesday night starting May 6th going through June 3rd from 6 to 9, and you'll get to see their living conditions because
yep.
it's a 24-hour-a-day job a couple of days a week.
Yeah.
You'll get to see the equipment. You'll get familiar with all the different trucks. Why in the world do they call it a quint? Just call it an aerial ladder truck. What is a quint versus an aerial ladder truck?
So the aerial ladder truck, it has a platform on it, whereas our quint that's actually parked outside right now, it's just the ladder. So there's no platform to stand on the end. If you're up there using the nozzle on it, you're kind of you have these foot pads and you just lay on the ladder and control it from there. Whereas with the aerial ladder, it's taller as well. It's kind of more comfortable. You get to stand up and actually see and can do a little bit more work on that.
So the cheap city of Quincy could only afford one comfortable platform, and the rest of you guys have to lay on your bellies on this giant anaconda hose. Well, why not? I guess I don't understand. Okay, here,
mm-hmm.
educate me,
yeah.
Zach. Why would you have something without the platform? I mean, it
mm-hmm.
doesn't make sense to me. Why bother?
Oh, well, they each have their different uses. With the platform, with it being taller, and you can get people off like tall buildings easier. But with the quint, it's just more designed to put fires out as well. It's got a water tank on it more that we can use for it. And it's just easier to use the stick as well, especially it's got different uses. You can break windows with the stick too, and it has a nozzle on it as well, and you can get people up and down just as easy.
So it is not a lesser piece of equipment.
No,
it's
definitely not.
But
yep.
definitely you. See, I would want the pink bucket and
yeah.
I want little, you know, flower decorations around it. I'm up at the very tallest thing. But every piece of equipment you have has been, wouldn't you love to talk to your great grandpa about this?
Oh, yeah.
Has been engineered and technology to make it for the most safe use for you and
mm-hmm.
the most ability to preserve property and to rescue human life that's trapped.
Yeah.
And so there's something new and delicious coming out every year, but you probably
mm-hmm.
only get a fire truck maybe once every 10 years.
Yep.
So every time a new piece of equipment comes on board at Quincy, you're going to get two in the coming years.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like so silly. What do you mean in the coming years? Well, they have to be ordered. They have to be built
yep.
especially for Quincy. I mean, this is not something rolling off an assembly line like we made 8,000 million
yeah.
fire trucks last year. This is really a high-tech piece of equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that probably some fire departments can't get some equipment, or if they get it, they have to park it outside because
mm-hmm.
their old fire station, well, heck, Quincy Central Fire Station probably had a horse barn in there, didn't it?
Yes,
or
it did.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, I mean, you know, you get something really big and expensive and exciting. You have to build you spend that much money on a truck, you're going to build
yeah.
a garage. Yeah. So there's a lot of things, again, the average person just doesn't know about.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so exciting. So if you want to be part of the Citizens Fire Academy, you have to live in the city or own property in the city, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to be a property taxpayer, or you have to live in the city. You can be either or. And is there a charge for this? I don't think so.
I do not believe so. Yes, it is completely free.
I think it's free. We're going to go with free. You know what? If there's a charge, Zach's going to have to pay.
Yep, I will.
He didn't come fully prepared to the Mary Griffith Show, so I hope you don't find out tuition is $1,000.
No, it's definitely not.
No,
yes.
It's free.
Yep.
And how many people maximum can you take?
Right now, we don't have a maximum number that
okay.
we can take. We'd just like to fill up some spots and get people able to get in it, and the more the merrier.
I know that it's not a large number of people that, well, first of all, you have to be willing to commit the time and all that other stuff. And the other thing is, you have to have a small enough group that you can all use the apparatus and see everything.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's not like 200 people are going to be in class.
There will be a cutoff at some point, but we aren't anywhere near that number.
So call, and what is the number they should call? Because they don't call 911. Please don't call 911.
No,
so sign up to be in the Citizens Fire Academy.
You can call Central Fire Station, and the number for that is 217-228-4458.
Okay. Please call during regular business hours because we all know that pesky news reporters and others, they will answer the phone in the middle of the night.
Yes.
While I've got you here, I do want to ask you, you were not there when the Welcome Inn caught fire. You were not there when they were extinguishing the fire. You were there on the wrap-up day the next day.
Mm-hmm.
This was an arson fire and very serious because of that. The loss of life, there could have been loss of life. When you pull up on something like that, I know you weren't there, but you've been trained to understand that concept. Now, that is an abandoned hotel. There was no reason to believe anybody was living there. However, there was no water, gas, or electric. So the fire didn't just start from, so there could have been people trapped inside. What is the mindset of a fireman when you roll up to the Welcome Inn, knowing that it's not like full of human beings in the hotel rooms, but that fire had to start by human intervention, so there could be people around.
Yep, and this fire was more in the office administration building of it rather than the rooms, but it doesn't change the fact that when we get to the scene, the first thing we want to do is make sure there's nobody in the structure and there's no danger to anybody. After that, once we can figure that out, then we can kind of get more of a game plan of fighting the fire. I wasn't there for this one. I was there the next day, but the crews that were there did a great job keeping everybody safe as well, but also putting out the fire and extinguishing it. So they did a fantastic job with it, and they made sure nobody was inside the structure as well.
I'm kind of asking you a question that really I should be asking the chief, so I don't want to put you on, but knowing after you realize there's no human life there, no human life to be saved, and knowing that the building is already vacant and abandoned, not that you don't try your hardest, but you're certainly not going to risk any firefighters' lives.
No.
I mean, probably decisions were made because I came to work that morning. It was burning. I saw the aerial truck like pouring water in there.
Yeah.
Like unbelievable amount of water. It's like, wow. And 2 hours later, they're still doing it. I'm like, wow, how much water, does it take to put out a fire? But of course, it does take a lot. The average person doesn't realize that.
Yeah.
So when command decisions are made, at the point you realize there's no human life to be saved here, we don't want the whole thing to burn down, and we don't want the downtown to catch fire.
Yeah.
But you start to pull back a little bit, I'm sure. So talk to people about that. You're not trying to get the fire out. You're trying to get the fire out, but you're not going to risk any human life to go in there to try to save an inanimate object like, oh, the file cabinet. Who cares? Talk about that.
So with structures like that have been abandoned and haven't been used recently, we'll go to more of a defensive firefighting strategy. So we won't put anybody else inside, or we'll take everybody out, and we'll kind of just fight it from the outside. Part of the roof caved in at one point, so obviously we don't want anybody in there. If we're worried about the structure, the integrity of it, we don't want anybody inside of there. So for one like that, we'll just be defensive. We'll be outside. We'll put the aerials up like you saw and just get hot spots from there and get the flames knocked down from there. If it's somebody's house or residential house and it's not too far gone, obviously nobody's in there, we'll still go in and get that fire out. We don't want your house to burn down. But when there's a worry about the integrity of the structure, then we'll pull out and we'll go to that defensive fire.
Yeah, a house may not collapse, but that already collapsed. Actually, it made fighting the fire easier once the roof collapsed. You could didn't have to obscure. There was joking. Why didn't they just let the damn thing burn all the way to the ground? Because it's going to be demolished anyway. This made the decision to demolish it a lot easier, but some people were saying, why did they do such a good job? Because, it would have made it a lot easier for the wrecking crew to come in later. But obviously, tell me this, because it's not obvious, Mary, or you wouldn't be asking the question. Yeah. I was here when you weren't even probably born. The JCPenney building caught fire, and I lived downtown, and I was awakened to... I live on the fifth floor, and that's my window.
Oh, yeah?
So I knew something was kind of up.
Yeah.
You know, you open up the curtains, and there's red-hot embers hitting the side of mm-hmm. my apartment complex. How do you, you know, I'm sure there might have been wind. How do you make sure that the Lincoln Douglas building doesn't catch on fire, the WCU building doesn't catch on fire? How do you go, do you station mm-hmm. people out there to look for embers, or how does that work?
So it just depends, too. Big thing is, like, wind direction. So, obviously, whatever's downwind of that structure, if it's a big fire and throwing embers up, you want to make sure, and that comes back to getting that fire put out quickly. The faster you put out that fire, the less likely anything else is going to catch on fire. So, obviously, you keep an eye out for it. Make sure nothing else is starting to catch on fire. And then, like, the main goal is to get the fire out. And that's why we don't let something like that burn down, because obviously then you have the smoke traveling through, you have the embers traveling through, and you don't want anything else to catch on fire. We call them exposures. So we'll check the exposures, and if it starts getting hot, like if a house is on fire and there's a house close to it and it's starting to get there, we'll actually wet that house down to make sure it doesn't suffer any more damage than it has, or to make sure it doesn't catch on fire as well.
You know, I didn't ask this question. I don't know if any reporter did. The Microtel was down. I think the wind was blowing that day that way to the south, kind of. Did you have to evacuate the Microtel or the Heritage House? Did any warnings go out?
Mm-hmm. So I wasn't on shift that day, so I'm not entirely too sure what all they did that day. I'm not even sure which way the wind was blowing that night.
I can tell you, I was there. Yeah. I mean, it was... Everything was going kind of down the river, mm-hmm. if you want to call it that. So, again, obviously, where they're going to be worried is where the wind is blowing.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah. And like I said, those big fires can put some big embers out.
Yes,
and,
yes, they can.
They could travel a long way, and then you can have a really big problem. Well, mm-hmm. anything else for the good of the cause? I've asked you all kinds of questions. I've asked you about your personal life. I've asked you about things that a fire chief should know. Thank you so much for being mm-hmm. so educated.
Oh, no problem.
Anything else for the good of the cause, Zach Valcamp?
I just recommend people to sign up for the Citizens Fire Academy. It's a fun time, and you'll get to learn a lot about the fire department, and we're really looking forward to people signing up for it.
Okay. I thank you so very much. Back mm-hmm. to work with you
yep.
in your shiny red truck.
Yeah,
hey, where'd
you
guys park? We were laughing. I said, they'll never find a parking place.
Uh-huh. We're just on the north side of the building
okay.
here right now.
In the no parking zone. See, you can get away with that. I parked my car there one time. They made me move it.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to paint my car red and put official fire vehicle on it. Yep. I can't park there. Thank you so much.
Uh-huh.
Coming up, St. Patrick's Day. We'll learn all about it. I am hoping that somebody is on the phone at the Ursa Farmers Cooperative, because I think my phone is broken. They probably couldn't hear me, but I'm praying. Is there anyone alive on the end of this line at the Ursa Farmers Cooperative? Apparently not. So we'll abandon that for now and move on to something else. Okay. Well, we will not go directly to the Ursa Farmers Cooperative. Instead, we'll hope that these people, and you know what, Paul, if you'd come over here to this microphone, not that one, this one is better. Okay, my favorite people are here, and that's all that matters. We have got Mary Kay Waldhouse here, and we have got Paul Gears here. They are here to talk about, wow, they are here to talk about St. Patrick's Day. So, St. Patrick's Day is celebrated on March 17th in St. Rose of Lima Catholic Church. Although everybody here calls it St. Rose of Lima.
They don't know.
They don't know. And all my whole life, until I was a fully grown woman. And then somebody explained to me, where do you think St. Rose was from? Lima, Illinois, or Lima, Peru? And I went,
Yeah.
It makes sense. But anyway, just call it St. Rose and we'll have no problems, right?
Correct.
I mean, how many St. Roses were there?
Pardon?
How many St. Roses were there? I mean,
if you look on the internet, there are quite a few St. Rose of Lima churches.
No, I don't mean Lima. I mean, how many different St. Roses were there? Do we have to put Lima on the back? Isn't there just one St. Rose?
I think it's just because that's where she was from.
Well, I know.
You know that.
You know what I mean. Anyway, we digress.
Yes.
Let's talk about the fabulous St. Patrick's Day dinner that is going to be held Monday, March 17th at the corner of 8th and Chestnut at St. Rose Church. And it is a drive-through only event.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And but the menu hasn't changed in a long time. So let's talk about the menu. By the way, you both look absolutely fabulous in your St. Patrick's regalia.
Top of the morning.
I'm loving it. Top of the morning to you, Mr. Gears. Notice I went to Mary Kay for the important information.
Of course.
You're like the color commentator. Got to keep him quiet as long as possible. Mary Kay, tell us about this, please.
Well, first, thank you for having us on your show. And, of course, we're always going to have the corned beef and cabbage. And then if people like to have the German sausage and the sauerkraut, we have that. Or you can have a combination of both. And they all are served with mashed potatoes, bread, and cherry or apple pie.
Mm-hmm.
This year, the price will be $14, which is pretty fair. Last year, we had a very good turnout, like over 1,200 people, almost 1,200, 1,120, I guess. And the time will be from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m., so we can drive through anytime you want to. Actually, driving through is really much quicker than eating in. You can come off of 8th Street, go down the alley, and they have a ticket there. You fill out what you want to have to eat. By the time you drive up and pay for it, the food's bringing out to you. And it's people seem to like that, you know.
Well, there's multiple drive-through lines, too.
Yes.
And that makes it great. It's just like ordering. Instead of saying, what do you want? And then, you know, but they'll write it down for you, or you write it down, and you can get 15 meals, you can get 2 meals, it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
If you want a big order, you could call in advance, I guess. But if you want 15 meals, they'll just probably tell you to pull over a little bit so that you don't jam the whole system up.
We have a good serving line, too, so they're quick.
They're quick. And again, there are a lot of different options. Some people don't want this, they want that. How specialized can we make this? Because I know you can have corned beef and cabbage, or you can have... Is it bratwurst or is it ribs?
No, it's German sausage.
German sausage.
Right.
Okay.
Now, me, I'm German, so I do prefer the Irish dinner myself.
Because you eat the German food all the time, yeah.
Yes. Okay. And there's something about that meal. You know, everybody looks forward to St. Patrick's Day because it's so special for everything. But what's really neat is the food. And when you smell that food, it even makes you hungrier. And I have seen people come back and order at noon and at night.
Oh, yeah. I used to eat there twice a day.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Nothing wrong with that.
11 to 6 for your serving pleasure. Come in off of 8th Street, please. They have to have only one line. Now, do you want them to come heading southbound, too?
Well, they're going to... No, well, they, either way.
They either way?
Well, if you're coming from the north side of town, you can turn right. And if you're coming from the south side of town, you turn left. And then it'll be single line. And then once you get into the parking lot, it turns into two lines.
I understand that. But if you're going northbound, you could block traffic up, couldn't you?
We're going to be directing.
I'll be out there directing traffic.
With your shillelagh.
Oh, yeah, don't you know. We'll be a hootin' and a tootin'.
He won't have an orange vest on, that's for sure. He won't wear orange outfit.
Oh, my God, no.
If anybody wants to run down Paul Gears, I don't know. There may be a bonus in it for you. No, I love you, Paul. Let's talk about why you have this. It's obviously a big deal for your church. Your church is very special. Paul, I'm going to let you tell about that because this is a bishop's church.
Yes. Well, it's after the Latin Mass started, it's called the bishop's. It was a personal church, meaning that it's every church is under the bishop, but because of the Latin Mass, it's totally different. It's not like the English Mass where most parishes have it, and what gravitates toward the Latin Mass. A lot of the young people that never saw the Latin Mass, they do attend the Latin Mass. A lot of young couples, a lot of families got like 8, 10 children. You know, so they do come, and congregation is young congregation, really. We got some old-timers like myself and Mary, and my mother's the oldest. But it started out originally as an Irish parish. The Irish wanted their own parish.
Well, not only did they want their own parish, everybody wanted them to have their own parish because nobody else wanted them. But that's history.
Well, you know, St. Peter's opened up as the first English parish, and so the Irish, the Italians, and whatever went there. But all the Irish lived in the north end.
The others, yeah. Anybody not German,
the leftovers.
There were two things in Quincy, Germans and others.
Yeah.
And
yes.
The others had to stick together because It was us against them.
Yeah.
My dad always says he rescued my mother from a life on the South Side. He was able to bring her up north to where she would have never been allowed to come. Yeah. She would have been stuck in Cap Town
her whole life. Well, you know, when
they
were laying the cornerstone, and not just the one in 1892 at the first church, the second church, there was 8,000 people.
Wow.
Can you imagine? That's about a quarter of Quincy was there around that whole block watching them just set the cornerstone.
Yeah.
And the Irish went there. I remember my mother said when Aunt Mary, they were downtown one time, they said, we're going to go to confession here. Let's just stop at St. Bob's. No, we're going down to the Irish church. So they walked all the way down to St. Rose.
Tell him my sins because I'm German. I want a good Irish priest to absolve me of my sins. You know, we laugh about it, and it's kind of comical. But back in the day, there was, you know, we had, well, we still have it. They say the most segregated hour is Sunday morning at 10 o'clock because everybody's got their own parochial,
yep.
Whether they're Catholic or not, they go to their parochial thing. They do their own thing with their own church, which is their grandmother's church, their mother's church, their church, and not a lot of times not much changes.
Yeah.
And a lot of people like, ironically, and you've told me this and I've seen it myself, the oldest old-fashioned mass you can go to in Quincy is the one the young kids all want to go to.
Yeah. That's true.
It's so funny. They were not alive when the last time you could have a regular Latin mass, because that was like 1965 when it all changed.
Well, 1970 is when the official, when it really stopped.
Yeah, they started thinking about it in 63, 65.
Five,
it took a while to get it to...
Yeah.
To go, but I have vague memories of Latin Mass.
Well, you know, the last Latin Mass in Quincy was at St. Rose. Monsignor Fox would not give up, and he said it till when Father Donahoe faced the people. He still came out and said Mass at the same time at the old altar, and he went to genuflect for the last gospel and slipped off the step, and that was it, 1967,
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that was it.
That's a story. Well, you know, this just goes to show that no matter what the Pope does, somebody's going to disagree with it, no matter who the Pope
Correct.
Is. So,
well, even at the English Masses, sometimes you can go and you'll hear the Sanctus and the Agnus Dei, and they're sung in Latin, and the rest is in English. So we're kind of incorporating
Latin,
it back.
We
you know?
Do Latin every once in a while at Blessed Sacrament, not for the whole Mass, but we do it. But it's
part.
A nice tradition, and the younger people are embracing it now. Obviously, everybody goes because the food is great. I mean, I've never heard anybody go to a charity benefit because they were buying a new organ or whatever. You know, they're just there because the corned beef and cabbage is dang, dang good.
Right.
That's
but
right.
There will be something that will be worthwhile that will come out of the money that is raised. So, Paul Gears, what are you doing with the great hoard of 11?
If I could put it in my pocket, but I can't.
I know. Wouldn't that be great if you
and
Mary Kay?
But it goes for the maintenance of the church. You know, the church is over 100 years old, and there's stuff that we have to do to it. And I think we have to put some new gutters on this year. They're over 100 years old. We put a new roof on a couple years ago.
You put a new roof and didn't put new gutters? That's weird.
They were copper. You know, the old copper. And a lot of them are starting to show a little wear and leaking and... So we got to do that. And there's other things we have to do, too. We restored the windows already, restored the organ. Everything's paid for that way. But the maintenance of a building.
It's like everything else. Every church has to have... What you take in the till is usually never enough to...
Correct.
You got to have a... And frankly, I loved it when you had it in person. I will always, always argue for in person to come back. I know I'm singing in the wind, but... It's a great thing for your parish, too, because you got to get together. You got to cook all this food. You got to slice all these pies. Mary Kay, that's part of it, isn't it?
Yes, I do a lot of slicing.
I was going to say, do you build it? Like, is your right arm significantly bigger than your left arm after St. Patrick's Day because you're all pumped up?
That's
like
about true.
Like your
that's
blouse
about
breaks open on that side because of that massive muscle you get?
I'll tell you, the pies are lined up, and, yeah, it's just a really good system. They have it set up wonderfully. And it's quick and easy, and everybody comes and works, and that's the important part.
And the young kids get involved, because they're the ones that can run back and forth.
Oh, my
right?
God, yes.
Paul's like, quick, run this out there.
Forget that stuff.
But, you've talked about how you guys probably have more baptisms than almost any church in Quincy, really. You're growing so much. How many members? I know it's hard to tell members, because I could go to church there and never join. But how many members do you think you have at St. Rose?
I want to say 400. I'll just say approximately 400.
400
could be more than that, could
family.
Be less. We've only had 16 funerals in 16 years. And we've had 140, maybe more than that, baptisms so far.
That's good.
I think the nice thing is if people like the English Mass, they can always go to Latin Mass and see how they like it. But if you go twice, 2 weeks in a row, you will be hooked. Yeah. It's just that special.
I think, yeah. I mean, again, even if it's kind of like, I don't know if I get used to this, if you try it the second time, mm-hmm. you'll first of all, we'll all understand it. Yes, they're talking in Latin, but you already know what they're saying.
Right.
I mean, it's now, Protestant there, that might be a little bit different,
right.
you know, but I mean, a Catholic's going to know what's going on.
But like Paul said, the book has a Latin on the left side and English on the right side, and that's the way I was raised. I never really learned the Latin except when we're singing the Mass,
right.
then you know that part, but it's great. So
you get used to the pronunciations, and you know, I was a server a long time, and I can remember how Father Seraphin Tipisar, I was at Soldiers' Home serving Mass there, and he would underline so-and-so, this would, and it was easy. And then so 60-some years later, I'm still doing it.
I thought of an old blind Catholic question to ask Paul Gears. I'm always trying to get him in trouble with the bishop, you know.
He'll have the answer.
Now they've changed confirmation and First Communion. They've changed confirmation and First Communion, so it's now in the third grade. What do you think about that? We used to have to wait till eighth grade or senior mm-hmm. year.
But I'm not the bishop, so,
well,
you know.
The closest thing I'll ever have to a bishop sitting in the studio, so pretend you are.
The best thing about that is that it's being done.
They're
having confirmation,
yes. They're getting the sacrament, yeah.
And I think the bishop is having it, instead of, in the old days, they used to start at like 6 o'clock in the morning at St. Rose. And at 8 o'clock, they'd be at another church. And then they'd be at another church at that time. And the old Bishop Brian, I remember reading articles. Now the bishop has everything in Springfield where he's not moving around. Everyone has to come there, which, you know, makes sense.
There is a wonderfulness to go see a big, big church,
yes,
like
yeah,
the cathedral.
Yeah.
You know, but parishes have to get up a bus or whatever. But I was just curious what you thought about the youthfulness of the sacrament of confirmation, that it's not a separate incident now, it's together.
Together. Well, I think that's what Rome wanted. You know, it's not what I want, but, you know, you have to go along with it. So
you know, it's interesting.
I'm old-fashioned. I had confirmation in eighth grade.
And
you were 14.
And this is why everybody who thinks the Catholic Church, if you're out there listening, you think all Catholics are the same, and we're not, because bishops have some leeway over across the river. They don't get confirmed till they're a senior in high school.
Yes.
My godson was a senior in high school. I was in eighth grade. Yeah. It's kind of a tradition. Each parish kind of has a tradition, and now this is a new tradition in the Springfield Diocese, and going over to the cathedral to be confirmed. So
correct.
That makes it a little bit more special, I guess, although I remember confirmation was a new dress, new shoes.
That was a big thing.
Yeah.
Oh,
they used
gosh.
To question you in the old days in the sanctuary.
And you got was, really slapped.
I remember that.
You really got
well,
slapped.
Well, in the old days, yes. My mother said, she's 103, she said that when that Bishop Griffin hit her, boy, they really hurt my side. You know, slapped her.
They really said you may have to suffer for Christ. They showed you about it. Now it's just a little, you snowflake,
Yeah.
I'll just touch the side.
Well, I must have been good because I wasn't slapped.
Oh, you had to be slapped. It was just so gentle you don't remember it.
That's probably true.
You were so meek and demure. The bishop said she doesn't need the devil slapped out of her.
But the thing I remember, I went to a school in Keokuk, but we had the nuns.
Get right on your microphone.
Yeah. We had to have our hands folded, resting on the back of the, not our arms up on there. And if you weren't sitting up straight and doing it right, you got tapped on the shoulder.
Oh, yes.
No talking.
With a ruler.
Yeah, tapped on the shoulder. See, she had a different upbringing. She had a kinder, gentler diocese.
She was probably,
Everybody, if you think it's too strict here, move to Lee County.
Yeah.
Apparently, they have very very lax Catholic things. No beatings, no slappings. You had it easy growing up, girl. No wonder you've stayed with it this long.
Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, my gosh. No, I'm being facetious, but you know, it is a wonderful thing, and there's a tradition about the St. Patrick's Day dinner at St. Rose. Doesn't matter what religion you are,
everybody's
Irish that day, and even if you're not, you can still get a good old German sausage.
We're like a cemetery. We'll take everything.
My dad was worried he couldn't go into Calvary. I said, Dad, you've been known the Catholic Church your whole life. They will take your money. I went to Notre Dame. They didn't say, not taking the money. I went to St. Dominic's They didn't say, we're not taking your money. I said, they won't come and pray over you, but you can go in the hole. You can go in the hole there, Dad. Don't worry. You can be next to all the rest of us. They'll take your money.
It's a fun deal. You know, a lot of people, I love to talk to everyone as they drive up. I say, hey, how you been? Sometimes I know their parents or grandparents, and they always bring a dog or something. I like, can I pet your dog? Can I pet your dog?
And then
so a lot of people bring the dogs, yeah, just to, you know, just to have them out.
Okay, I've got a specially trained Rottweiler
that's
going to come and,
bring him.
And want you to pet it.
Okay.
Okay, let's repeat again. This is Monday. It is actually on St.
Patrick's
Day. It is going to be from 11, serving from 11 until 6. It's drive-through only, but they have multiple drive-through lanes.
Yes.
Correct.
Enter off of 8th Street, not Chestnut, not whatever's next. Come off 8th Street. And
there'll be plenty of signs.
There'll be signs there where to go in and out.
And tell us about that delicious menu one more time.
Oh, my gosh, that meal. Oh, I'm getting hungry already.
And the desserts.
Yeah. Corned beef and cabbage, or you can have German sausage and sauerkraut, or you can have a combination, one half of each, and they all have mashed potatoes and I think bread and apple pie or cherry pie. And that seems to be a real big hit. Everybody likes that. That's pretty easy.
Yeah, not as many dessert choices as in person, but great dessert choices because apple pie and cherry pie were probably the most popular anyway. So
correct.
Okay, so,
I have to go home and start baking because I have to.
I was going to say yes. So you can get a German sausage or an Irish corned beef. You can get cabbage. You can get sauerkraut. You can get mashed potatoes. You can get some kind of combination of all of it. Pick your pie and be on your merry way. And again, I know some people actually get this carry out for like their whole factory or something. Is there a number they can call in advance? Do you want orders more than X to call, or how does that work?
Well, you know, last year I think we had that you call the rectory, the rectory line, which is 217-222-2511. And I think Cindy was doing it last year. I think
so. You could call today if you say, look, I've got 50 guys.
Yeah,
I want to come pick up 50 dinners.
A lot of people do that, or they'll come up. But it's so fast, even when you drive up, you can't believe how we have that set up.
I mean,
20 meals, 15 meals, I've seen it already.
The only thing different this year, we do not have a children's meal.
Yeah.
So it's just adult.
Okay.
Eat up.
It's pretty good. If you go home hungry, there's something wrong.
Okay. Yes. Thank you so much. Yeah. Great to see you guys.
Great to see
you. You guys don't get older.
Oh, yes, we do.
Yeah, no, Mary Kay... I've known you for 20 years.
That's true.
You don't really look any different than when you cared for my father in his last days.
The Latin Mass did it.
I think about that a lot, too.
The Latin Mass did it.
The Latin Mass? Okay, I better start going because I'm falling apart really quick. Thank you both.
Good to see you.
Thank you so much
Thanks
for letting
again.
Us come.
Thank you.